Backseat Producers, episode 190, City Lights. Tony.
And this is Daryl.
And this is David.
We are the Backseat Producers.
Did you say David? I was writing Chaplin, and then it kind of merged into that. Mm. All right, what are we talking about
next week?
I
actually know somebody named David.
That's weird. I bet they're not cool.
Well, we've done some pre-planning, so we actually have boobies for next few
weeks.
We
have the next 4 weeks planned. Booyah.
Well, you know, when we have the next 4 weeks planned, we typically don't release episodes.
Yeah, something will happen. Something bad's going to happen. All right, so next week, Girl with the Dragon Tattoo. The following
week,
Dr. Horrible Sing-Along Blog.
Also bullshit.
The week after that, Let Me In. Let Me In. Yeah, I can't read my writing.
That's what I've done, ladies. Ow.
And the following week, Sucker Punch. So,
we are locked and loaded for the next few weeks.
And since I know so many people are going to listen to this episode about a silent movie, I'm going to go ahead and make a big announcement that I went through and made seasons of all the old episodes.
That's not a big announcement. I thought you were pregnant.
I am.
Look.
I'm pregnant with seasons of content.
Pregnant with seeds, huh?
I have birthed them onto the website. Mm. Yeah, so the way it's set up, you can go to backseatproducers.com/feeds. And there's a listing of all the different feeds you can subscribe to. There is a feed for each different show. There is a feed for each different season. The first two seasons are the content that was formerly called Fanboy Smackdown.
Bullshit. So you just got rid of that, Tony? Just wiped it off the face of your...
No, in fact, swept it under the rug?
No, it's organized.
It says Season 1. Fanboy Smackdown, episodes 1 through whatever.
Tony, I see you over there erasing Deuce from history.
I see you over there. I actually say... No. One of the seasons is when you show up. One of the seasons is when Daryl starts. One of the seasons is when we change the name.
I hit my own season.
We did that before.
That was episode 62.
Name change?
Yep.
What episode did I show for? 40-something?
49.
40. 13 episodes under Fanboy Smackdown.
You were on 13 episodes as Fanboy Smackdown. But there's a lot more stuff in there than that. Because, like, there was some of the stuff just before you showed up as part of that season, too. Like, all that On the Lot bullshit that I did. That reality TV show that was about making movies.
Oh, that looked terrible.
It was an interesting show to watch. The episodes are probably pretty terrible. And I don't know how you can get any context for what was there, because I don't even know if any of the content is even available anymore.
I think that show just disappeared.
Yeah.
Like, you actually swept that show under the rug.
I am probably the only place where you can even, like, it even exists. They haven't come to me with cease and desist orders yet to pull it down, because they're trying to erase it from the memories of everyone. I should probably look up some of the filmmakers who made the short films in that to see if any of them are working.
No,
that would be curious. I'd be curious about that.
Every 5 years or so, somebody gets the idea what if we did a reality show about making movies, and we'll call it The Lot, and then they Google it, and they're like, some asshole's already done podcasts about this. I guess we can't do that idea. But they've forgotten that they've already done it.
The one that was really interesting to me was when they did Project Greenlight.
Project Greenlight? Tony, come on.
What? Do you even know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, that's the one with What's-Her-Face Rossellini, right?
No. That's Green Porno.
That was Green Porno. Green Light, Green Porno, whatever.
No, Project Greenlight was where it was a a movie making competition, and if you were selected, your movie was made, and Ben Affleck was like a producer on it, and one of the first time I ever saw Shia LaBeouf was a child actor in one of the movies.
What?
Yeah, in one of the Project Greenlight movies.
Was it Constantine?
No, this was well before that.
Great movie, by the way.
I'll take your word for it.
You should. It was great. You'd think with Keanu Reeves it would be awful, but it worked.
That's kind of a go-to assumption for me, and I do get surprised by some of his movies.
The rest of the cast is fantastic. Like, what, Tilda Swinton's in it, and the guy who plays Satan is fantastic. He's very slimy.
That's appropriate. All right, so this week, City of Lights. High level, what do you think?
I heard or read or saw somewhere that this was voted the number one romantic comedy of all time. That is inaccurate.
Wow. That?
Yes.
Wow. I would not qualify it as a romantic comedy.
This was what, 1931?
Yep. Yes.
1931 was 80 years ago. It should stay there. That is my review. It's cryptic. Ooh.
Okay. Daryl, what did you think?
It was different. Looking at a movie falling 81 years back, and just a whole different style. It took a while to get into it, but once you kind of sit back and watch the story, you kind of fall into it easily.
Yeah, at first, I agree. It was hard to get with the pacing of it,
because
mm-hmm.
it's so repetitive.
Yeah. Yeah, you're right. This movie, if it were made today, I mean, for one thing, they had to spend so much time trying to communicate through pantomime that there were scenes that went on far longer than they would if there was just dialogue.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they either needed to do more dialogue or no dialogue. If they'd done no dialogue, the movie would have been better.
Yeah, because
you didn't need it.
You did. There really wasn't a whole lot of need for it. And what was weird, and I'll go ahead and start into it.
Whoa.
There was a scene toward the end of the movie where the police show up,
yeah.
And there's gunshots. And if you're listening to the soundtrack, because there's like this music, then there's gunshots, and they do the sound of a gun going off.
Yeah.
And the music. Yeah, and then you hear the sirens come in when the police cars show up.
They had the voice. They had voice.
Oh, yeah.
They just chose not to use it.
They chose to do this as a silent film instead of
all the sound effects and music were synchronized in the film. They're there.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's like I say, they just didn't use any dialogue for the actors.
Right.
This is kind of a hybrid movie.
Yeah, they were, like, holding on to...
Chaplin's decision to do it that way.
I think that was an interesting stylistic choice to keep it that way.
In fact, there was a big controversy over whether this would fly with the audiences or not. And apparently it did. There was still just enough, the talkies were still just new enough that there was still a residual still enough residual audience who preferred it or who at least enjoyed it this way.
People still like 2D movies.
Mm-hmm.
I won't see movies in 3D. Chaplin was a master of communicating without speech. I mean, because there are very few points in this movie. Is any of the pantomimes him? Are any of the panels him? Any of the dialogue?
Yes. He chatted quite a bit.
Yeah, there was quite a bit of the dialogue was his. But it wasn't...
It wasn't necessary.
I could have watched this movie without any of the dialogue panels.
Yeah.
The story was there. I mean,
was The Hangover, by the way. You see this shit? Yes.
Yeah. I saw you tweet that, and as I was watching it, I agree.
You put on our 2011 lenses, and we watch this movie, and we're like, okay, so this bum disrupts a civic ceremony and does not care. And not only does he not care, but it looks accidental, but it's obvious that he is being a dick to everyone in the crowd, because he's like... trying to get off the statue, but he's obviously not trying very hard.
No.
Like, he knows he could get down. Everyone knows he could get down. He chooses not to. And then he tips his hat. That's the dick move right there.
Yeah.
That's Charlie Chaplin saying, hey, F you guys.
Well, that was kind of one of Chaplin's signatures was always the little guy always thumbing his nose at the big guy.
Yeah, it literally happened.
Yeah, he had a nice little scene in there where he's literally thumbing his nose at them.
Yeah. Then he meets that drunk guy, and that drunk guy is the best character in the movie.
That drunk guy is awesome. And it's great because, and as an actor, that guy pulled it off that you could see when the scene started whether he was playing drunk or sober.
Yeah.
There was never a question about which personality he was.
Like, that guy was on or off.
Yeah.
That guy was Harry Myers was the actor.
I bet he's dead.
Probably is, being that he probably was in his 30s or 40s in 1931.
He'd be 120 now, yeah.
He's hanging on.
Hey.
Recently Dead Guy podcast. That's right. If anyone in the cast was still alive after this episode, they're not.
Yeah.
We're finishing him off.
Yeah, that guy was awesome, because all that dude did was party and be hungover.
Yeah.
There was no middle ground for him.
No.
Yeah, the running twins are still running.
He was either drunk or sober, and that was it.
And it's two different people.
Yeah, completely. So the other main character in the story was the blind girl.
Yeah.
Virginia Sherrill.
That's a weird thing. This movie's 80 years old. I'm skipping around. Did he give her money and then she could see?
Yes.
There was a point where he read the newspaper, and then, like, they paused for a really long time in the newspaper, and it showed an article about some doctor in Vienna that can restore eyesight. So it's sci-fi.
It's one of the plot hooks.
Yeah, one of the plot hooks is that there is a doctor that can restore eyesight. So
so she could actually hopefully see him.
Right.
And then he has also the problem with the rent check, and that doubles it up. So it's double down on the disasters here he's got to do.
Yeah, so
the immediate problem and the long-term problem.
Well, and that problem really only crops up in the last third of the movie.
Really?
I mean, that's the whole
Yeah, that's where it makes the transition between being a comedy to the romance.
The problem and resolution don't even appear until the final third of the movie.
Mm-hmm.
The final act. I mean, that's just it. Everything else is set up. It's just setting the stage of these characters, letting Charlie Chaplin be
the tramp,
slapstick and funny and amusing to watch and a great character, and interacting with the blind girl, interacting with
the eccentric millionaire,
interacting with his butler,
mm-hmm.
and just kind of building all those relationships so that when you get to, hey, now we have a problem. And the problem is, if we don't have $22, we're getting evicted tomorrow.
$22 whole dollars?
Whole dollars.
Yes.
We're not talking pennies here. We're talking whole dollars.
You know what I was confused about? It was a distinct lack of racism in this movie. There was a black guy, and he was not a slave. Like, this was 1931. I just assumed
They were all in the same training room.
Yeah, like, that was weird.
Yeah.
Like, I expected it to be much worse than that. And
at the training room when he was trying to box to get money.
Yes.
Yeah.
That was weird to me.
Well, yeah, it probably was weird for 1931 to see anybody of color mixing with anybody who wasn't, especially in a sporting event.
I think in sporting events, just in the history of sports that I'm aware of, sporting tended to
be more
cross they tended to cross racial barriers a lot quicker in sports.
Yeah, Jackie Robinson played baseball, because that was around then, wasn't it?
No, that was about 20-some years later.
That doesn't sound right.
I think it was a little later, but it was. Mm-hmm. I think boxing, we had a lot more crossover a lot earlier, especially in kind of an underground boxing. This wasn't.
Yeah, but to see any sort
this
of,
wasn't prize fighting,
right? But to see any sort of black actor in a movie mainly made black for a white audience was is a little unusual for its time.
That's more telling, was that they actually had a black actor instead of somebody in whiteface or something, or blackface or something crazy like that.
Jackie Robinson was born in 1919, so unless he was playing in his 30s, 20 years later it would be 39.
So it would have been probably in 1940.
Yeah.
So it would have probably been 10 years after this, give or take.
I guess that makes sense, because sports really don't... Sports, I guess, is more about aptitude instead of... Like, there's a there's a definite objective ability.
Sports is about meritocracy. I mean, you really have to
perform.
You have to perform. You have to be able to do the job. And regardless of race, if you can do the job, the boundaries get removed.
Meritocracy was the word I was looking for, Tony. Thank you.
Not a problem. Normally, I'm the one that loses words. You're slipping.
Away. I know. It's a headache. All right, so there was something else about this movie that really caught my eye.
Well, I'll check one thing here. One thing I noticed was the amount of camera motion that they allowed. There wasn't all fixed lenses. There was in the boxing scene. There's a lot of motion where they're panning around in there.
Yeah, Michael Bay.
Right. Well, again, for 1931, the cinematography technique was just fixed focus, lock the camera down, focus, and that's it. Everything took place.
Everything's
the frame,
a stage play.
And they have some, again, camera panning around, following the action in the ring, and in some cases, other parts of the movie too.
Yeah.
There were fast cuts in there where he's being pelted by the newsboys with the pea shooter. Mm-hmm. They cut back and forth on that. I mean, there were some innovative techniques for that time.
So, did you ever remember what you were going to say?
No.
One of the things I liked was, so at the end, he goes to the rich guy and asks for the money. Well, the rich guy is loaded, and he makes mention that he needs the money, and he just pulls out a wad of cash. He's like, $1,000 enough, and he just hands it to him as the guys who are there to rob him. So there's the misdirection that happens there, and the police end up thinking he took the money because he actually still had the $1,000 on him, and he was holding the gun that the robbers dropped. So then there's the slapstick antics of turning the lights out and running off, and he got away with the money. So then he goes to the girl, gives her the money. There's a really nice scene, and he tells her, I'm going to go away for a while. I'll be back. And he goes, and basically he knows he's going to jail. And he kind of accepts that fate and accepts his punishment. Mm-hmm. With $1,000 in 1931, I would imagine he probably could have left town.
Yeah.
You know, fairly easily.
Well, he gave it all to her, though.
He did, but he could have left town with her.
Probably.
You know, and it was cool that he gave it all to her so that she could get her problem fixed, and then he accepted punishment for something he didn't do.
But well, he was trying to essentially kickstart her life. Business, her life. I mean, she's been held back by her blindness all these years. And now she's going to get a chance to see, actually get things fixed and see him, so he doesn't want to really pop her bubble of the fantasy that he was a wealthy, good-looking guy.
Two things should have made this movie better. One is if in the end, instead of recognizing him, he just moves on.
Yeah.
That would have been awesome. And two, if the doctor had given the woman Cyclops eyes.
Lasers.
Everything she looks at catches fire.
That would have been better.
Yes. Probably some technical limitations on that, but
yeah, she opens opens a welding shop instead of a flower store.
If the old Superman could do it, then I think they're probably going to pull it off in 31.
That's true. That is true.
With some clever camera angles, and you got laser eyes.
Yeah. The cool thing was is that last scene at the flower shop, I honestly did not have any clue how it was going to go.
Yes,
and
I didn't know either.
And what was wild was, you know, I mean, we have the benefit
of 80 years of romantic comedies.
Well, 80 years of romantic comedies and 80 years of technology, so that we know that there's only 3 minutes left in the movie. And it's like, I don't know what is going to happen. I literally have no clue how this is going to end.
Yes.
And that was great. I love that.
Yeah, that was great. Because the entire time I was like, man, it's going to be awesome when he just walks away. Like, he's like, oh, hey.
You have a better life now, and just...
And just moves on.
And just moves on. If that would have happened, I would have been perfectly happy.
Yeah, I would have been like, man, this movie was great.
Yeah.
This movie deserved to be on the top one of that list.
Yeah, but that would have been too much of a downer for that time.
That's not a downer.
What was interesting was how they ended it. Because it was a pretty open ending. Mm-hmm. I mean, there was still... They could have done 5 more minutes and told you a little more about what happened.
On the edge... That she's going to come back and say, you're the one I really truly loved, because I saw your inner light.
But the thing is they didn't need to go there. They didn't need to waste.
Yeah,
my time as a viewer.
As I've said before, with most romantic comedies, I wanted to get to the point where we're about a half second from in penetration, and then cut it. That way, I know.
He would have about slammed her on the ground.
Yeah. Yep. No spinning top. The spinning top is the opposite of the half second before penetration. That's what that is. And I want a vaginal cam, too. Like, out. Dong coming at me. Ready. Willing. Inevitable.
What's awesome is there's going to be some film student who listens to this episode and is like listening to our analysis and then gets... The vaginal cam with the dong coming at him, and they're just like,
"Yeah, so write a paper on it and probably receive."
If you write a paper on this, send us a copy.
Yeah. I went to the store the other day to buy the new George R. R. Martin book, and I was walking past the technology section. I saw Podcasting for Dummies, and I opened it up, and I was like, "Holy shit! I'm quoted in here as an expert." Booyah! No, yes. Walked on.
An expert about a dying technology.
Yeah, about technology, I think is dead.
That's hilarious.
Yes, they were standing in the presence of greatness and did not even realize it.
Well, I know. I almost flipped it open. I'm like, "This is fucking.
This
me.
Is me. Hey, do you mind if I sign this?
Yeah.
Who wants me to audit you? Want me to autograph this for you?
I'll even sign T's name, too. 2 for 1.
I'm in expert podcasting practices.
All right.
Hey, for
Mark. White Bronco out there. I think OJ's here.
Look out.
Like that nice callback 10 years ago? Longer.
That's going to say it's more than 10.
I was still in grade school when that happened, I remember.
I was working in a plastics plant in Alabama.
I don't know what plastics are. All right, so
that one may have gone a little far.
So, what also surprised me about this movie, and I kind of remembered it from before, was the flippant and cavalier way they treated suicide. Like, he goes down the first time he meets the drunk guy.
Mm-hmm.
The drunk guy is going to kill himself.
Oh, yeah.
And like, everyone's fine with that. I mean, I guess it was right after the Depression. So
well, the people jumping out of...
They were pretty comfortable
with happened.
That.
Happened.
Jumping out of windows because of the stock market crash. Yeah, that's probably a pretty common thing.
But that's kind of like a slap in the face, society-wise, because that guy was not poor. Like, that guy wasn't rich and then became poor because the market crashed.
No, he's just depressed.
He was rich and rich.
And lonely.
And lonely. And depressed.
And just wanted a drinking buddy, of which Charlie Chaplin was happy to oblige.
He was very happy to be his drinking buddy.
If he could survive the encounters.
This was the best thing about the 31 stuff. Like, the cavalier and the really offhanded way that they treated things like drunk driving and suicide and robbery.
Hey, the car? Take it. It's yours.
Are you okay to drive? Am I driving? Yes. I love you so much. That was the line of the movie where I was like, it's the goddamn Hangover.
Yeah. Yeah, it really was. I don't know if it necessarily deserves, like, some of the placement on, like, the AFI. Because AFI has it rated in the top 100. And then, like, for their 10th, I think it was, like, in the 60, in 60s in the ranking. And then they did AFI Top 100 10 years later, and they had it ranked at like number 11.
That's not right. It's not getting better.
For the content of the film itself, it is not deserving of that.
No.
For its influence, it might be.
Yes, because there are a lot of jokes that were in this, which I don't know how many more romantic comedies came before this one. So you got to figure at some point, like, this is the start of some of those romantic comedy tropes.
Right.
Like, there are a lot of comedies that are stealing ideas from this movie.
Because it's...
There are a lot of movies in general that are stealing ideas from this movie.
Yeah, but you got to remember a couple of things, too. Most of the movies from the 20s and 30s did not survive. This one survived because of its uniqueness.
Yeah.
That's why it keeps coming, keeps getting... People keep citing it all the time because it's one of the few that actually made it, that was preserved well enough, because Chaplin was big on his preserving his own films.
Well, it's not a bad movie. Just in the larger context,
yeah. I mean,
new movies
ultimately,
it's not as great.
Ultimately, it's watchable.
Yeah.
I mean, you
could lift the plot out, put more modern actors and slightly better technical work in it, and the story would still hold up fairly well. You might have to change some situations around to bring them up to date, but
yeah,
the basic story is still pretty solid.
If you're going to adapt it from what it is now, I'm either going to need it to be a hardcore pornography or like a Zack Snyder 300-style drama. If it's just like a straight adaptation, I'm not in for that. It's got to be something extreme if you're going to reimagine it.
I don't even need it reimagined,
no.
but I think what this does...
Have a tongue... Because somebody cut it out with a spear. Something crazy. Like they threw a spear through his mouth.
That is extreme.
Like, in one cheek and out the other, and then, like, his tongue is lanced on the end of the spear. That would be awesome.
That would be extreme.
He's got scars. And, like, scars could almost look like the like fake
mustaches
on the other side.
They could just have Seal play that guy.
No, I don't want Seal play that guy.
All right, so... Ultimately, for me, what watching this movie has done is it has given me more of an appreciation for Charlie Chaplin.
Yes.
As a creator and as an actor.
So
because he wrote, directed...
He directed.
And starred
produced,
in this movie.
Yeah.
Yeah. So he was... This was his gig.
Mm-hmm. From top to bottom.
And I enjoyed it. I enjoyed watching this film.
Yeah,
I'm likely going to seek out more Charlie Chaplin films based on enjoying.
You're
this
welcome.
One. Thank you. It was your suggestion.
I just saw it. I was cruising on IMDb and I saw it number one on the list, and I was like, "That's bullshit."
Well, you can get the
let's prove them wrong.
The next one he made pretty much after this, Great Dictator, where he actually talks. It's the only time he ever did.
And he looks just like Hitler.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he has a weird face. And creepy eyes. It's true.
Mm-hmm.
So, there are a couple people I think are masters of things. Charlie Chaplin is a master of expression without speech. That is a fact.
He very clearly conveyed every thought and feeling. Like I said, if they would have done away with the
dialogue
cards...
necessary.
Yeah, if they would have done away with those completely... I would not have had a problem following the movie.
Yeah, and the directing was clever too. Like, there was a lot of things that for some audiences would need to be spelled out. Like the fact that she was blind, they don't say that she's blind. It's just implied heavily through what happens. Like the story is told, the show they don't tell.
Right.
In a very quite literal
sense.
You
figure it out on your own. From
yeah.
The way she moves and does it.
Acts
looks.
And, yeah. Yeah, and
1931, Jeff, come on.
Well, one other thing, too, just a technical thing, the fight scene, how well they choreographed that.
Mm-hmm.
Because there were some, if you watch it carefully enough, you notice occasionally they tag each other.
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
And those were not just stunt throws. Those were real swings.
You live for your art. You die by your art.
I want to see a little bit more leg on Charlie Chaplin, though. I mean, come on. They were 1930s in shape, out of shape guy. Like, when the replacement boxer shows up, you're like, oh, this guy's a badass. And then he takes off his shirt and we're like, oh, that guy's kind of fat. Like, this is not impressive.
This is 1930s.
And that ripped. Guy is ripped. Oh, that guy's on roids.
That's like, some of this is might be lost on you, but the conversation came up at work yesterday because somebody saw there was a trailer for the new Dallas. They're doing a new Dallas TV show.
Roadhouse.
I go wish. Pain don't hurt.
Stop it. Oh my God.
We haven't done that movie. I might just make that happen.
No, I'm out for that. I'm sick that week.
So they're doing a new Dallas TV series. It's not a remake. It is a continuation. Like, right. they're picking it up
20, 30 years later?
Yes. It's like the next generation is in charge.
Oh, what? Does somebody wake up from a dream all of a sudden?
JR, Bobby, Sue Ellen, they're all still in the show. Like, just that much
peripheral,
older.
Yeah.
They're just that much older. And the conversation came up. It's like, yeah, so one of the guys was like, yeah, I was watching one of these shows from the early 80s and like one of the women in the office was like, you know what I noticed? Those women were all flat-chested. It is amazing how far plastic surgery has come on television. And it is true. I
think women's breasts are just getting larger in general.
Yeah, they are. They are, but...
And younger, too.
That is very true. But at the same time...
It's weird, because like as we've evolved as a society, that becomes less of an issue until later.
It's... Some of the studies that I've heard said it's because of like the hormones and stuff that are being used in the food.
Preservatives and stuff.
Yeah.
Well, also better diet and exercise. Earlier ages tends to make you mature a lot quicker too.
There's less malnutrition in general.
There's less malnutrition, but the exercise is abysmal.
Yeah.
Like generally we are more unhealthy now than we were 50 years ago because 50 years ago people had to work. there wasn't enough food and you had to work.
Right.
More physical.
Yeah, there weren't any fat people in 1931.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I was watching the movie and I was like, there's no fat people in these scenes.
Like
there aren't any fat people.
The two people who were probably had the most girth on them were the eccentric rich guy and his butler.
Nah, the mayor was pretty fat.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Well,
and that's
politicians.
That's a trope of politicians.
Yeah,
I mean, that's
and that might have actually been intentional.
Planned, yeah.
It's the fat kid.
Well, I mean, so you have the politician and the rich guy. Mm-hmm. Those are the ones that have weight on them. That makes sense, and that's a commentary on society.
Poor people are fat now. That's weird.
Poor people are fat now because the
fast food's cheaper.
Mm-hmm. It is more expensive to eat healthy.
Yeah, it's more expensive. It's harder, more expensive too. And time-consuming. It's lazier and cheaper to eat fast food.
Yes. 99-cent beefy burrito.
Yeah, you
Taco
can't
Bell.
Come on.
Seriously.
The worst thing is, it's not beef.
Doesn't need to be.
It's mostly beef.
Mostly, yeah. Yes.
Corn-fed too.
Hey, they're mostly. Not saying it's the beef burrito. It's the beefy burrito.
Okay, that's how they get around
beef-ish.
It.
Beefish. It's the beefish.
It's got beef flavor in it.
Beef-like.
Beef-like. Yes, you hardly taste the sawdust.
Yeah, the way society's evolved is weird. That's just a weird thing. Like, 80 years ago, this wasn't an issue. Now it's an issue. But we have less starvation. More education, less starvation, but generally less healthy. But
true.
We live longer.
For what it's worth.
Yeah, we just...
Because those last years are great.
My last year's going to be awesome. The gun right here. Just let it rip.
You're going to miss all the nanotechnology.
No. I won't miss it, per se. They'll reconstruct my eye. It'll be awesome.
What are you going to do when the singularity comes?
Singularity. I'm going to rub myself like this.
Just like every week.
Yeah. All right, what else we got on this?
I
think we've pretty much covered it.
Who would you say this movie would be for? Daryl.
I'd say for cinema fans or someone wanting to kind of just take a look back at the past and see how things were done. A film student could get a lot out of this.
Mm-hmm.
Academics, right there.
Yeah, academics. Just film fans in general. I mean, it doesn't hurt to occasionally look over your shoulder every now and then to see how far you've come.
If I was getting a degree in cinema or teaching a class on cinema, this would be one of the films I used as an example.
I would say someone who wants to be an actor might also benefit from seeing how these people act without dialogue.
It is a fantastic...
Well, yeah, it's true acting.
It's a fantastic study in the over-exaggeration required for acting.
Yeah.
Well, over-exaggeration for this...
There was also some real subtlety.
Acting in general is over-exaggeration.
Well, yeah, somewhat, but there's a good over-exaggeration in there. It's just way too much. It's overacting.
Have you ever seen Nicolas Cage?
Well,
come on.
Yeah.
Have you ever seen Gary Oldman?
I know. There's always some that could say, hey, you need to take a look back at the old guys and see how they were able to convey emotion without being so obvious.
I watched Astro Boy twice this week because Nicolas Cage was one of the voices. Roadhouse. We're going to be on that all night. Not even what we were talking about. Roadhouse.
That didn't sound good. I think it just broke my neck.
Uh-oh.
Well, this will be funny.
But nonetheless, like you said, yeah, actors should study this film. Director should... budding director should be study this film. Anybody who's a fan of film should take a look at it at least once.
It's just a good story, too.
Mm-hmm.
I just enjoyed the story. It's simple, but...
There's depth to it.
Elegant. If there was
drunk, come on.
If there was dialogue to this,
it would be ruinous.
It would be, and it would also require that it probably only have like a 45-minute runtime.
Right.
The acting necessary to tell the story in pantomime, and if you look at the opening credits, they even say. City Lights, A Story in Pantomime by Charlie Chaplin. So, you know, it very definitely wears that on its sleeve that this is meant to be pantomime.
Well, there's also signature, this is a Charlie Chaplin movie, too.
True.
It's my brand.
You know what
you're getting.
It's a simple story, it's effective, and it's really hopeful also, which... I imagine in 1931 that was kind of a necessity.
Well, there were a lot of people who would identify with the Little Tramp a lot more than anything else. I mean, it's a chance for them to project into the character.
There were only two classes of people in this movie. The rich and the poor.
Well, that's the only... In 1931, that's the only two classes you had. There was the middle class was, like, very, very tiny.
And they made the rich look like a buffoon.
Mm-hmm.
The rich guy was a buffoon.
Mm-hmm. But again, that's a signature of Charlie Chaplin, though.
I think the one thing that's going to stick with me from watching the movie, though, is the last thing you see, and it's him with that look on his face of just pure joy. He is just in his moment.
Mm-hmm.
And that, I thought that was a really cool, effective ending. I'm done.
All right.
Booyah!
What the hell was that?
I
got nothing.
All right.
Eric is stealing my jokes. Eric is stealing my jokes. Also, the penitent man kneels and then rolls forward for some reason.
Come on!
That was my joke. Goddamn Eric. What a turd.
All right. So, next week, Girl with a Dragon Tattoo, then Dr. Horrible, then Let Me In, then Sucker Punch.
Booyah.
So, cue up your insta-cues and be ready.
And probably sometime shortly after that, I'm thinking we might have an episode where we kind of briefly go over all the superhero movies that happened this summer.
Oh, yes.
I think it's worth talking about.
Yes.
I think it's worth talking about.
For Dark Knight Rises?
Yes. That is delicious looking. Have you seen it, Dara?
Yeah, I've seen it on Boing Boing. It's pretty wicked.
Looking
boinged in my pants. Holy crap!
Looking up with the skyline falling down with the bat symbol highlighted. Yeah, that was delicious.
Oh, Christopher Nolan's another one that he can give me a handy in an alleyway, and I would be fine with that.
That's
also,
fair.
This Emily Browning chick is of age.
I settle for his autograph.
I would tag that. Like there's no money.
All right. See you guys next time.
All right. Thank you. See you soon.